Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, today we're going on to text 13 of Tattva Sandarbha. Yesterday we were talking about, beginning the discussion about how the Puranas are actually Vedic. And we read through some couple of verses, and particularly one verse from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is one of the Vedic scriptures in the strictest sense of the term. Means it's part of the four Vedas. And so we can see how the case is definitely there, very clearly, that the Vedic scriptures, I mean the Puranas, are Vedic. And today we're going to continue on with that. I just thought I could mention, first of all, make a little clearer, what are the differences between the four Vedas and the Smriti or the Itihasas and Puranas, that other part of the Vedic literatures which is being questioned here. So we made the point that the main difference really is in terms of language. There are two forms of Sanskrit, Vaidic, V-A-I-D-I-K-A, or Vedic. That is that very old, very traditional form of Sanskrit, very complex form of Sanskrit. And then there is what we call classical or Puranic Sanskrit, and that is the Sanskrit which the Puranas are written in and the Mahabharata and so on. It's much simpler. We made a comparison, the comparison of Hindi to Sanskrit. Hindi is much more simple. So it's something like that. In those days, Vyasadeva's times, then that classical Sanskrit was popular language. So it was written in that popular language. You may know there's that one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Sudra Dwijabandhu Nam, something, something, that goes on from there. That the Mahabharata and the Puranas, they're presented for the people in general, basically. So they're written in the language which in those days was fairly readily understood by the majority of people. So now, to get a little specific about the differences between the two types of Sanskrit, we could just mention a couple of points. Well, first of all, I could mention also that the four Vedas, not just the language itself, but the way in which things are explained, that is also quite figurative, a little cryptic, a little complex, as compared to the expression in the Puranas, which is very, relatively at least, straightforward and relatively simple. What I mean is, it's something like the difference between one, a purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and one by Srila Prabhupada, if you know what I mean. If you're familiar with Brahma Samhita, then you would know what I mean. Yeah. So there's a difference like that in terms of just the way things are put in words. Yeah. So that's an important point. Then getting into the actual language as such, in that Vaidic or Vedic Sanskrit, There is a system of different accents. There are three different accents. And depending on the accent, then a word will mean something different. In classical Sanskrit, there's only just one basic, simple accent. The grammar in Vedic Sanskrit is very complex. If you want to learn that form of Sanskrit, then, you know, if you've already learnt Sanskrit as we're familiar with it from Srimad Bhagavatam, then you have to continue studying for many years. Already, probably you've heard, or maybe some of you know a little Sanskrit, already to learn the Sanskrit which we are familiar with from reading Srimad Bhagavatam and so on, already to learn that now in Kali Yuga, that's not easy. I don't know if any of you have tried, but if you've tried, if you've looked into it, then you would have seen this is a very involved and sophisticated language. So that Vedic Sanskrit is considerably more rigid, or there are considerably more rules, put it that way, over and above the rules which are there in classical Sanskrit. There's a system to the ordering of words in Vedic Sanskrit. In classical Sanskrit, the word order does not matter so much. But in Vedic Sanskrit, if a word is moved out of order, placed in another position, changes the whole meaning. It may become nonsense, in fact. But in classical Sanskrit, it doesn't really matter so much. Just like you take a simple English sentence like, the man went to the shop. So if you turn the man and the shop around, you've got now the shop went to the man. So now you've got nonsense. In classical Sanskrit, it doesn't really matter too much what order the words are in. It's very flexible. But you can tell, you know, in that sentence, the man is the subject, the shop is the object. So in classical Sanskrit, there are endings. There is a system for knowing what is the subject, which is the object. So it doesn't really matter which way around they are, because you can always tell which is the subject and which is the object. But in Vedic Sanskrit, there's a very strict system of ordering the words, which complicates things. Then another interesting difference is that Vedic Sanskrit is not spoken. I mean, it's chanted, obviously, in mantras, but it is not a conversational language. Classical Sanskrit is a conversational language. Of course, nowadays, that's also another thing, because it's Kali Yuga. Who uses Sanskrit as a conversational language? But at least traditionally, it's been used as a conversational language, like a people's language, whereas that Vedic Sanskrit is very formal, very kind of intellectual and very academic, really. So these are some differences between the language of the four Vedas and the language of the Puranas and the Itihasas, Mahabharata and Ramayana. So like this. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. So then in text 12, we saw some evidence and good evidence for how the Puranas, they really are Vedic. We heard that they do have the same Apaurusheya source. They're coming from the same person, even though the language is different, but they're coming from the same person, and the intention is the same. So these are important points. So now we're going to go on to text 13, and there, particularly the point which is going to be brought out, there's a couple of points, but the main point, really, is how there are a number of authoritative statements which make the point that the Itihasas and Puranas are the fifth Veda. And when the Vedic literatures were first presented by Narayan or Krishna, right in the very beginning, then when he presented the Vedas, then along with them he presented the Puranas right at the outset of creation. So that is the main point that's going to be drawn out, and then there are some implications of that, which we'll talk about in due course of time. But let us just read through the translations now of these different parts of text 13. Therefore, the Prabhas Kanda of the Skanda Purana states, in ancient times, Brahma, the grandfather of the immortal demigods, executed severe penances. This is referring to Lord Brahma sitting on top of the lotus and not knowing what to do, and then he tries climbing down the stem and he hears tapa, and he goes back up and he performs his penances. So as a result, the Vedas became manifest along with their six supplements, their word-for-word glosses, and their reordered texts. There then appeared the entire Purana, incorporating all scriptures. Just note there that he says the entire Purana. He doesn't say the Puranas. He's talking about one unit, the Purana. The Purana is unchanging. It consists of eternal sound, is auspicious, and includes as many as 1 billion verses. It emanated from Lord Brahma's mouth. Listen to the description of its divisions. First is the Brahma Purana, and then it's not quoted here, but the Skanda Purana goes on to talk about the other Puranas. So then, 13.2. The figure of 1 billion mentioned here refers to the number of verses existing on Lord Brahma's planet. The Purana is existing there in a 1 billion verse form. In a passage similar to the one quoted above from the Skanda Purana, the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has a passage that starts, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.12.37. In this passage, there's a group of verses he's referring to. We find the statement, it's Itihasa Purana Ni Panchamam Vedam Ishvara. Sarvebhya eva vaktrebhya sasrije sarva darshana. Then Brahma created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all his mouths, since he could see all the past, present, and future. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.12.39. Here also the word Veda refers to the Puranas and Itihasas. They're being identified as being part of that original presentation made by the Lord. So therefore they're as Vedic as the Vedas. Elsewhere, 13.3, elsewhere we find similar statements to the effect that the Purana is the fifth Veda. For example, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.20, the Itihasas and Puranas are called the fifth Veda. Then he taught the Vedas along with the fifth of their number, the Mahabharata. So, of course, Itihasa, Purana, they're being grouped together. So, Mahabharata is certainly part of that fifth Veda, and that is from the Mahabharata, the Moksha Dharma section of Mahabharata. Oh, and yeah, there's a little more of 13.3 over the page. If the Itihasas and Puranas were not Vedic, they would not be specified as the fifth in statements such as these, since counting necessarily involves things that belong to a same category. Yeah. Then 13.4, moreover, the Bhavishya Purana states, the Veda written by Krishna, Dwaipayana Vyas, is the fifth Veda and is known as the Mahabharata. And the Chandogya Upanishad of the Kautamiya branch of the Samaveda states, sir, I have studied the Rig Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Samaveda, the fourth or Atharva Veda, and the Itihasa Purana, which is the fifth Veda, and so on. And so on implies these are not the only statements. There are a number of statements to this effect. Yeah. And 13.5. Thus is disproved the objection that denies the authenticity of the Itihasas and Puranas as we know them, by presuming that the Itihasa and Purana mentioned in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad statement about the breath of this Supreme Being are nothing more than certain parts of the four Vedas. The same is said by the words beginning, first is the Brahma Purana. So most of that is kind of self-evident, really. I would say relatively straightforward. The point he's making right at the end here, in 13.5, is related to those, well, it was 12.3, I think, yesterday, if you recall. In 12.3, page 13, Srila Jiva Goswami raised a hypothetical objection. Some people think that if the Puranas and Itihasas are to be considered Vedic, then they couldn't be a separate composition with a different type of language. I don't know if you, I hope you're getting this point. They couldn't be like a separate set of books with a different type of language. You would, if they're really to be Vedic, you would have to find them amongst the four Vedas, in the same language as the four Vedas, just as an integral part of the four Vedas. Otherwise, how could you say they're really Vedic? If you're going to say that the Itihasas and Puranas, they are this other collection of books in this different language, then you can't say they're part of the Vedas, because they're another collection of books. Do you get the idea? I hope you get the idea. So that's the objection. Now, so the answer is, as presented in 13, that there, here we have authoritative statements, particularly making the point that the Itihasa and the Purana are the fifth Veda. Now, they are authoritative. Of course, we know in due course of time, shortly, it is going to be quite clearly established that the Puranas definitely are Vedic. Srila Jiva Goswami is sort of assuming it already by quoting the Puranas. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we can have confidence then when we read like these statements from the Srimad Bhagavatam about the fifth Veda. Then there's two statements here from Srimad Bhagavatam saying that the Purana and the Itihasa is the fifth Veda. Then Mahabharata is saying that it's the fifth Veda. So even though we're still in the process of establishing it, we know it's going to be established, so it is authoritative. Yes, some people think that the Puranas are more recent creations. That's basically what they think. Because they're written in a more recent language. Yeah, and the Mahabharata, I mean, the Mahabharata happened then. Yeah, it happened then when Vyas was there. So it appears to obviously be, you know, it completely goes without saying, apparently, to these people, that it is a more recent creation. There it was created right there. Anyway, it's not like that, and we'll get to that point in due course of time. So these statements then, they're statements from Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharat, saying that the Itihasa Purana is the fifth Veda. But then again, the last verse he quotes is from the Vedas. Chandogya Upanishad is part of the Sama Veda. So even if you say that we only accept the authority of the four Vedas, but here are the four Vedas saying that the Puranas are the fifth Veda. So you have to accept it. You have to accept it. Unless you're a real fanatic like the Arya Samaj, but we won't even talk about them because they're really in the minority. But there is a group of people who feel that the Puranas and Itihasas are not Vedic, generally for the reasons that we mentioned. And they'll only accept the Vedas, which includes the Upanishads and the Brahmanas and Aranyakas. But here is one of those very books that they accept as authority, saying that the Puranas and Itihasas are the fifth Veda. So Jiva Goswami says that thus, in 13.5, thus is disproved this objection that denies the authenticity of the Itihasas and Puranas as we know them, by presuming that the Itihasa and Purana mentioned in the Brihadaranyaka statement, you remember that one, right? The last verse quoted in text 12. That when it talks about the Lord breathing out the Vedas and the Itihasa and Purana, that the Itihasa and Purana that was breathed out was part of the four Vedas. Because how can it be part of the four Vedas if it's the fifth Veda? It's not possible. It is something else. It is actually the Itihasa and Puranas as we know them. Yeah. Because there's no other, there's nothing else that we could possibly apply the term to. So, these Itihasas and Puranas can't be part of the four Vedas if they're the fifth Veda. Because then, you know, it's just, that's not possible. So in this way, he has disproved that claim. Then on top of that, as we said, in 13.4, he's quoted Chandogya Upanishad, which is part of the Sama Veda. And he says, ityadi, and so on. Iti means thus, adi means sort of like this is only the beginning. So let us read to you a few other verses from the four Vedas which confirm the same thing, and they're part of this and so on. Just so you know that it's not just based on one verse or two verses. Okay? A fairly big assumption on the basis of just a couple of verses. So, in the another verse from the Chandogya Upanishad. I'll just read the translation. Indeed, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva are the names of the four Vedas. The Itihasas and Puranas are the fifth Veda. This is another verse. Actually, it's from it's from the Chandogya Upanishad, but it's a different verse from the one which is mentioned here. Then the Atharva Veda says, this is actually from one of the Samhitas of the Atharva Veda, The Rig Sama Yajur and Atharva Vedas appeared from the Supreme Lord, along with the Puranas and all the demigods residing in the heavenly planets. Then again, the Atharva Veda. He approached the Brihati Mita, and thus the Itihasas, Puranas, Gatas, and Narashamsis became favorable to him. One who knows this verily becomes the beloved abode of the Itihasas, Puranas, Gatas, and Narashamsis. So this is all to do with the manifestation of the Vedic literatures. This all happened at that time, and this is a description of various things that happened at that time. Then the Gopatha Brahmana, doesn't say which Veda it's attached to, but it's one of the Brahmanas. There's a verse which says, in this way, all the Vedas were manifested, along with the Kalpas, Rahasyas, Brahmanas, Upanishads, Itihasas, Anvakyatas, and Puranas. So these are some verses. There are many others, Vedic statements, which make it clear that the Itihasa and Purana, either they're Vedic in a general sense, or even specifically that they're the fifth Veda. So it is authorized. It's very authorized. So that is fairly solid then. Verse 13 has established it all fairly solidly. Now we're going to go on to text 14. Text 14, there's a little more about, in the first part, a little bit more about why the Itihasas and Puranas are considered the fifth Veda. Then in 14.2, there's another statement from Shruti. The Taittiriya Aranyaka is quoted. And then there's some explanation about the process of condensing that Vyas applied. So let us read through. 14.1. These words, spoken by Suta Goswami in the Vayu Purana, describe why the Itihasa and Purana are considered the fifth Veda. So, Vayu Purana says, the personality of Godhead, Srila Vyasadeva, then chose me as an authorized speaker of the Itihasas and Puranas. At first, there was only one Veda, the Yajurveda. Vyasadeva divided it into four parts. Within these were manifested the ritual activities of the four kinds of priests, on which basis he arranged for the performance of sacrifice. With the Yajur mantras, in other words, he's saying that Vyas divided into four Vedas, because you'll see there are four kinds of priests here. Each one is dealing with mantras from one of the four Vedas. With the Yajur mantras, he arranged the activities of the Advaryu priests. So they're priests who deal with the Yajur Veda and the instructions given there. With the Rig mantras, those of the Hota priests. With the Sama mantras, those of the Udgata priests. And with the Atharva mantras, those of the Brahma priests. O best of the Brahmins, out of the Akhyanas, Upakhyanas, and Gatas, Vyasadeva fashioned his Puranas. Whatever was left over from the division of the Veda into four is considered Yajur Veda. Such is the definitive word on understanding the revealed scriptures. We'll come back to that. We also see that the Itihasas and Puranas are employed in the recitation of the Brahma Yajna, as is enjoined. That the texts in the Brahma Yajna, the texts to be recited include Brahmana texts, Itihasas and Puranas, that is the Taittiriya Aranyaka. That is the third type of Vedic scripture, Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. This could not be the case if the Itihasas and Puranas were not Vedic. How could the Taittiriya Aranyaka, which is extremely Vedic by anyone's standards, how could it say that you have to chant the Itihasas and Puranas in this Brahma Yajna, which is extremely important Vedic, for Vedic sacrifice, if the Itihasas and Puranas were not Vedic? The Supreme Lord says in the Matsya Purana, O best of Brahmins, foreseeing that in the course of time the Puranas will be neglected, I appear as Vyas in each age and make an abridgment of them. According to what we have seen here, what the Lord means in saying this is that I edit the already existing Purana for easier assimilation. 14.3. Immediately after this, in other words, also from the Matsya Purana, the following is said: in every Dwarpara Yuga, I divide the Purana into 18 books, totaling 400,000 verses, in which form they are disseminated on this earth. But even today on the planets of the demigods, the Purana contains 1 billion verses. The purport of that original Purana is concisely incorporated in the 400,000 verse edition, which is the version for the humans. 14.4. Since it has been stated that whatever was left over is considered Yajur Veda, it was just immediately tacked on to the Yajur Veda, these 400,000 verses were not tacked on, but it's part of that original Yajur Veda. These 400,000 verses were not new compositions, but the most useful portions of the original, collected into an essential abridgment in this world of mortals. So, just little information about in 14.1, these four types of priests, what they do. So the Yajur Veda priests, the Advaryus, they recite the main mantras. They recite the main mantras. And they're responsible for establishing the sacrificial arena, sanctifying the paraphernalia, like this, and the basic mantras. The Hotas, the Rig Veda priests, their duty, they are compared sometimes to the master of ceremonies at a festival or a feast or some sort of public get-together, in that they invite the demigods to take part and partake in the results of the sacrifice. The Udgata priests, they're the ones who are experts in the Samaveda mantras. So they chant mantras particularly to appeal to Lord Vishnu, who is Yajna, who is the ultimate presiding deity of all forms of Yajna, and who is always present. He always has to be invoked in any type of Yajna, because these four Vedas means Yajna, fire sacrifice. He has to be present. He has to be invoked. No matter who the yajna is kind of directly aimed at in terms of which demigod or what result, Vishnu has to be there. So these Samaveda priests, the Udgata priests, they would focus on getting the mercy of Lord Vishnu. Then the Atharva Veda priests, the Brahma priests, they're kind of a kind of interesting group. And the Atharva Veda is a pretty interesting Veda. It tends to be very tantric, kind of black magic and all that sort of stuff. So the Atharva Veda priests, they're on the lookout for any mistakes, or particularly they chant their mantras, but they're also called incantations, if you know what I mean by that. That kind of, you know, like magical, mystical type, even black magical type verses to protect the yajna from inimical, subtle forces. In fact, amongst the followers of the Vedas, there are the Chatur Vedis and the Tri Vedis. The Tri Vedis mean a particular branch of the Brahmin community who do not accept the Atharva Veda, because it's kind of tamasic or something. It is not as rich as the other Vedas. Yeah. So that's just a little bit about that. Okay, then. So anyway, the point being made in 14.1 is, this is Vayupurana. By now it's not completely established altogether, but it's pretty clear that the Puranas and Itihasas are really Vedic. So, you know, we can take this without any doubt that this is an actual description of what Vyas did. He took the one Veda, the Yajur Veda, divided into four, put different people in charge of the four. That's all described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And they put different people, their own assistants and so on, in charge of different sub-departments. So in this way you end up with these four divisions in terms of the four Vedas. And then he took out of the Akhyanas, Upakhyanas and Gatas. So in the original Veda, because the Purana and the Itihasa, of course, has simply been extracted from there anyway. So there was a part of the original Veda. There were parts called Akhyana, Upakhyana and Gata. And they were the historical parts of that Veda. So he extracted the Purana from there. In fact, what Vyas did is very nicely described in one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. There's one verse in the 12th canto, chapter 6, verse 50. Rig Atharva Yaju Samnam Rashir Udritya Vargasha Chatasra Samhitas Chakre Mantrayar Manigana Iva. Srila Vyasadeva separated the mantras of the Rig, Atharva, Yajur, and Sama Vedas into four divisions, just as one sorts out a mixed collection of jewels into piles. Thus he composed four distinct Vedic literatures. This is the expertise of Vyas as a divider. Vyas has two functions. One is called in Sanskrit sankship. Sankship means to condense. Like the Purana comes down from 1 billion to 400,000 verses. The Mahabharata, incidentally, came down from 60 million to 100,000. That is explained in another Vedic literature. So he is expert in condensing. And then he's expert in dividing. All these things were all just mixed up together. This verse here from the Bhagavatam says, just like a big pile of jewels. So he separated them out. All of the diamonds on one side, all the emeralds on another side, that sort of idea. Taking out all the historical parts like this. $12,650. Yeah, okay, so let's just move on a little bit here. Oh yeah, 14.2. This is also important in terms of confirmation from strictly Vedic sources, Shruti sources, that in the Taittiriya Aranyaka, which is very classic Vedic scripture, it says when you do the Brahma Yajna, you have to chant mantras from the Itihasas and Puranas. So, Brahma Yajna is part of the Pancha Mahayagya, if you've heard of that. Prabhupada mentions it when Narada Muni visited Krishna in Dwaraka. He went from house to house, saw that Krishna was doing different things. In one house, it's described very clearly, Krishna was performing the Pancha Mahayagya. And Prabhupada explains that Vedic householders, they perform this sacrifice because in household duties, different sinful activities are committed unavoidably. When you're cooking, for example, little insects get burnt up. When you're walking, little creatures get trampled on. So the idea is that for householders, according to the Vedic system, as stated here in one of the Aranyakas, the householders have to perform this Pancha Mahayagya, five types of sacrifice. One of them is this Brahma Yajna. And here the Aranyaka says you have to chant mantras from the Itihasas and Puranas. Sorry? Oh, yeah. That's true. That's a fact. Yeah. That's true. So that is really basically dealing with that point. Now, here in the middle of 14.2, there's a bit of a change of subject. And he talks a little bit more about the methodology of Vyas and the sort of implications of the methodology of Vyas. So he quotes here from, is it the Matsya Purana again? Yeah. The Matsya Purana again. He confirms, the Supreme Lord is speaking, and the Supreme Lord says that I appear as Vyas. We mentioned that the other day. So Vyas is a post, it is not a name. And sometimes the Lord may appear personally himself, although generally there's a Shaktyavesh avatar, means a Jiva soul who is empowered, so they can be considered as a form of the Lord. It doesn't make it, that Vyas inconsistent with this statement here, where the Lord is saying that I appear as Vyas. If there's a genuine Shaktyavesh avatar, then for the Lord to say that I'm appearing is quite valid. So then he talks about how he edits, how he does his condensing and dividing. Of course, he doesn't go into detail about it, but he does say that in 14.3, he says he divides, he condenses, and he comes up out of that Purana with 1 billion verses comes the Purana or 18 Puranas with 400,000 verses. But he says the purport of that original Purana is concisely incorporated. In other words, by cutting it down, we haven't lost anything. if, because we might be concerned about that. You know, they've got to be Vedic, but what's the point of having them even if they're just, you know, just bits and pieces, and if it's not really, you know, the real essential message of the Puranas, then even if you say that these condensed 400,000 verse collection of books called the Puranas are Vedic, but if they're just bits and pieces and it's not the real thing, then what's the value of them anyway? So he says that even though I've condensed it and divided it down so much, but the purport is there. It's all there. And to drive that point home even more strongly, in 14.4, Jiva Goswami says that these 400,000 verses were not new compositions, but the most useful portions of the original. So it's actually the best of the original. It's the very best. We have not lost anything of real substance, put it that way. Yes, the principle of good editing is like that. The principle of bad editing is the more you edit, well, the more you edit it down, the more you lose. Yeah. But good editing, yeah, is like that. So Vyas is like a real expert editor. Now, let's see. Well, I think maybe we'll just go on to text 15 on Monday. Otherwise, we're going to have to rush it. Any comments or questions? Yes, Madhaji?
Verse 14.1.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's Sutta Goswami. Yeah. See, it says here, right at the beginning of 14.1, these words spoken by Sutta Goswami. Okay? So that's these words that you just quoted part of. So Sutta Goswami, he was appointed by Vyas. This is also there in the Bhagavatam. When these Vyas divided into four divisions, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, different people are put in charge of each Veda. And with their disciples and assistants, it becomes further subdivided, and they all work on different parts, you know, getting it together under Vyasa's supervision. So the Itihasa and Purana was handed over to Sutta Goswami. Yeah. Yeah. At that time. So the speaker, just like who's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam? Sutta Goswami. Yeah. He is the speaker of all the 18 Puranas. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu? A contradiction? Well, I think from Narayan or Krishna to Brahma is fairly clear, isn't it? The Lord instructed Brahma through the heart. He breathed out the knowledge. It's expressed in different ways. But he gave the entire body of knowledge to Brahma. Including that Purana, which had a billion verses. So then, you know, in humans, so that Brahma, that's the demigod version. Then, for the humans, the same information was passed down in disciplic succession in human society. Now, in demigod society, the knowledge has not been lost. But in human society, in due course of time, the knowledge became lost, or kind lost, messed up, mixed up like that. And this is why Vyas appeared, one reason why Vyas appeared. So Vyas had to collect together all the Vedic knowledge that he could find, and then reorder it for the benefit of human society. Yeah, he had to do like that. Some of it was easily available, some of it was not, like Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada instructed Vyas. Vyas went into trance, and then Srimad Bhagavatam was revealed to him. So he came across, he managed to accumulate the Vedic knowledge at that time in different ways. In fact, it's going to be discussed in, I think it's 16 or 17, it's 16, Gotama's curse. Through Gotama's curse, the Vedic knowledge was lost. This is one reason why Vyas had to come, why Krishna had to appear to speak Bhagavad Gita again. You know, when Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, chapter 4, verse 2, that the knowledge was passed down through the line of saintly kings, but in course of time the succession was broken. That basically is talking about Gotama's curse. He pronounced a curse that the Brahmins in human society would lose their Vedic knowledge. Yeah. So Vyas had to come and collect Vedic knowledge, accumulate Vedic knowledge, and then reorder it. So it worked like that. Yeah. Which one? 13.1. Yeah. Six supplements. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure. It may be this, the six divisions of Smriti Shastra. Doesn't say exactly. I'm not sure offhand. I'll see if I can find some reference. Yes. No, the Shruti doesn't change. The Smriti, yeah. And this is one explanation of why there are sometimes, and Jiva Goswami will mention a couple of cases, there are different words used sometimes. Yeah. Because there is not so much insistence on maintaining the exact word, the exact words, as long as the message is the same. Yeah. He makes that point. I mentioned yesterday, I think, there's Purusham Puranam and Purusham Puravam. Actually, they end up meaning the same thing. So those are two readings of Srimad Bhagavatam with slight difference. Yeah. Right. See, when they came, they were all mixed up together. That verse from Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that. It's all there. But it's like a pile of many different types of jewels. And the thing is that the Brahmins, who were expert, they were able to focus in on the particular parts that they needed for their work. Yeah. Without it having to be divided up. But they could just go through and take something from here, something from there, something from somewhere else. Yeah. So you know, like it mentions in 13.1, I think it is, about how the Purana emanated from Lord Brahma's mouth, having received it from the Lord. First is the Brahma Purana. So it's all there, but it's all kind of mixed in together. So one thing that Vyas, the Brahma Purana was there, even though it's called, in this verse, the Purana. But then the different Puranas are like chapters in the Purana. When Vyas did his work, he extracted them all and separated them out from the others. Just like a person who takes a big pile of jewels, takes out all the diamonds, all the rubies, like that. Doesn't mean you've got something different. It's the same jewels, but they've just been organized in a way which is simpler for simple people in Kali Yuga. The language, well, it's not mentioned here. It's in Vedic, probably in Vedic Sanskrit, and Vyasa's then simplified in his editing work. Because that's what it says, Sri Sudra Dwija Bandhunam. Srila Vyasadeva compiled it in such a way that it was easily accessible in the language of the day. Yeah. That's right. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. It's eternal. It's always existing. Just like Valmiki spoke Ramayana before Ram appeared. Yeah. Ramayana was existing before Ram appeared. So, prior to Valmiki's time, it had just been lost for the time being. And he then went into trance, chanting Mara Mara, Rama Rama in the end, and it was revealed to him. So this, in fact, is the subject matter in text 15. Yeah, that you get, different things. You get some Vedic literatures named after people who are not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like the Taittiriya Upanishad means the Upanishad accumulated by the pigeons. Anyway, we're going to explain about that on Monday. How come the Taittiriya Upanishad got its name? And various other literatures like the Katha Upanishad means the Upanishad spoken by Katha Muni. It doesn't mean that he just wrote this book, out of his head. This is part of the eternal Veda, but he taught it. He's very prominent for teaching it, so his name is attached to it. But actually it's coming from the Lord, and it's eternal. But we'll talk about that more on Monday. It's Alpa. No, they're definitely compiled by Vyas. Oh, yeah. They're all compiled by Vyas. Where they're bona fide. Yeah. Tantras. Now, I'm not a big Vedic expert. I just try and stick with Prabhupada's books. But tantras, they are part of the Smriti. The Smriti. Systems, it's like Upasana Kanda. Different systems of worship. Like the Pancha Tantra of Narada Muni, which we follow in our deity worship. That is a Tantra. It's a Vaishnav Tantra. But then there are other types of Tantras. Normally this term Tantra is used in the sense of like kind of black magic and that sort of, isn't it? Kind of like that. But there's also Vaishnav Tantra. There are tantras in the modes. So for the tamasic people, they get tantras to do with, whatever, some type of dark mystical things. Right. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Madhaji. Are there some people? You may be referring. Are you referring to the people we've been referring to who accept the four Vedas with the Upanishads? Or just the people who accept only the four Vedas? See, there's the Arya Samaj. We mentioned them earlier. They only accept the Samhitas. We said that the four Vedas have the Samhita section, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. They only accept the Samhitas. But they're in the minority, and they're kind of on the decline also, Arya Samaj. But there is definitely a group of people, and there was, you know, Arya Samaj, that came about, I don't know, maybe 100 years ago or something, Swami Dayanand. But back in Jiva Goswami's time, there were people who only accepted the four Vedas, but including the Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. And they didn't accept the Itihasas and Puranas as being Vedic. And Bhagavad Gita is Itihasa. It's part of Mahabharat. Although it's Upanishadic in nature. But no. No, they wouldn't accept Bhagavad Gita, that's it. It's sometimes called Gita Upanishad because it is Upanishadic in terms of method of presentation. How the arguments are presented, it's Upanishadic. Uh-huh. It's Upanishadic by nature. Not as being really authoritative, no. They may like it because it's similar to what they accept as authoritative, but it's not actually authoritative for them. Yes, yes. But you see, you might ask, seeing, you know, we've read these various verses from the Vedas and Upanishads, which say that the Itihasa and Purana are Vedic. So from that we can understand that this opposition from these people who thought they were not Vedic was quite big in those days. And even today, if you're preaching amongst Indian people, you definitely, I've met people, and they don't accept the Puranas, they don't take them seriously, or, you know. So these references are very valuable for that. In fact, I got into a debate by letter with one of these people in South Africa. And when I presented these verses, because I had done the Tattva Sandarbha course then, I presented these verses, he was shocked. He couldn't believe it. He gave up the debate, actually. He couldn't believe it, that I wasn't just quoting from the Puranas and this and that. I was quoting from his own scriptures. Yeah. So it's very useful in preaching terms when dealing with that type of person. Yeah. Okay, I think we have to end here. So we'll see you on Monday. For the time being, why don't you read on to the end of this section? Means section 2. It goes up to the end of text 18. Why don't you do that over the weekend? It's not very much. But this is what we're going to try and do on Monday and Tuesday. Srila Prabhupada Kita. Thank you.